Hey, Curly Tees. Welcome to the Curly Tee Podcast. I am in a little bit of a noisy environment, so bear with me. Today, I want to discuss why certain ingredients are chosen. A lot of people ask me, well, why did you use this ingredient over that ingredient? Or what's the process of deciding which ingredients they should use and why?
Let's see if we can explain it.
For me, the most important consideration is availability. Some ingredients are difficult for home DIYers to source. Like, I cannot tell you how many things I want to try out that I cannot try out because you have to spend an enormous amount of money. Enormous to me, an enormous amount of money to actually obtain them. You'll often run into a situation where you just won't be buying enough product for them to even consider dealing with you. You may have to purchase things from a different country, in which case you will incur high shipping costs. I've been in situations where I wanted to try something and the shipping cost is twice as high as the actual ingredient. So when you are making these considerations, you have to take into account what you can actually get your hand on and whether or not it will be worth it going through all of these extra steps in order to obtain it.
And you might also think that all this doesn't matter. But that's where you'd be wrong.
So for me, again, availability remains a thing. And then you have to deal with this notion or this thought or this, you know, speculation that certain entities are gatekeeping the best ingredients from small DIYers, from small homebrewers, from the people who would take this wonderful thing, this magical ingredient, and just make this stuff at home. And that will negatively affect how much money they can charge for the products that they are selling commercially.
I said what I said.
I think you better run that by legal.
So you have there, I would say, I don't have any independently verifiable information that would suggest certain companies are gatekeeping certain ingredients. It's just speculation and a feeling that many of us who start or who have started with DIY, very small, you know, literally in our kitchens, it's a speculation that we have. Now, whether or not that can be proven in a court of law or something is completely different. But some people do feel like the bigger companies are gatekeeping.
Then how dare you question the fact?
Become a member at CurlyTee.com for all of the DIY formulas, including instructions, tips, notes, full ingredients lists, and other information.
Another thing to worry about when you are selecting ingredients is figuring out which ingredients work best for your hair type. Like, for example, for me, BTMS has a more substantive feeling on my curls than, say, a Verisoft EQ65. Even though Verisoft is great, it is a great conditioner. But I'm telling you, for my curls, the bang for my buck and the length of time it lasts softening my hair, for me, that's BTMS. BTMS has the edge. For me, BTMS is the goat. Some people may not like it. Some people may think it's too heavy. But deciding which ingredients to use, you do have to take into account on whose head you're going to be putting the ingredient.
Natural hair beauty is possible if you take care of your hair and make the most of what nature has given you.
Like, if you have long, wavy hair, BTMS may feel awful to you. It may be too heavy for you. You may benefit greatly by Verisoft or some other much lighter conditioner like a Quaternium 80, right? And so whatever hairstyle you're trying to do and the type of hair, whether it's, I hate the hair typing system, I can't stand it, but the only way I can get you guys to understand quickly what I mean is by saying 2A or 4B or whatever.
Phil, everybody's different. That's what makes people interesting.
So if your hair is 2A, you are more than likely looking for something that is lighter, an ingredient, a conditioning ingredient that won't weigh your hair down, that won't make it feel heavy, that won't make it look greasy. So you are less likely to like products that have those heavier conditioners and oils and stuff in them.
Now look here, you.
Right, but you can always go down in percentage on BTMS, so don't completely rule that out either.
Learn at your own pace at CurlyTee.com. Create finished products by watching each DIY video.
But whatever the creative concept, quality has always been a prime consideration.
Another consideration that goes into why people select particular ingredients is personal preferences. Like, some people are still anti-silicone. They hate the very idea of silicones. There's been years worth of anti-silicone marketing. I too used to believe that.
Then how dare you question the fact?
And as a result, I think my hair has suffered a little. It's gotten much better in probably the past 5 or 6 years. But I used to believe that silicone was the enemy, or one of the enemies that we had to stay away from. And my hair got very dry and very brittle because, like I said, I had 4B, 4C hair. My hair benefits greatly from the addition of silicones. They may actually be great for helping to prolong how long your hair stays moisturized.
Brittle hair, in turn, is liable to break off in larger quantities than you care to lose.
So if you use an ingredient that doesn't have silicones and your hair is fine for 2 days, that may work well for you. You may not have a problem with that. You can continue to do exactly what you've been doing.
What I say goes, see? I'm the law around here.
However, if you want moisturized hair for the majority of the week, please consider using something with some type of silicone in it so you won't have to keep reapplying every 2 days or so. On the issue of personal preferences, some people have allergies to some ingredients. Organic materials can cause allergic reactions. Listen, some people are allergic to certain oils and they have to stay away from them. And many manufacturers use some ingredients like mineral oil and stuff like that because they aren't prone to triggering allergic reactions in most of the population. And they have to consider, when it comes to the big ones, when it comes to the big manufacturers, they must consider the greater good. Okay, so.
Yes, I can see it all now.
If you personally have a thing with mineral oil, they're not going to completely take it out of their products and off the market if there are an enormous amount of people who benefit greatly from those products. At best, they'll create a different line, which may or may not be more expensive for you. There are also people who have like nut allergies and things like that, and they may have to stay away from some of the most beloved and widely used ingredients in hair care products, for example, or skincare products. Some people have a commitment to only use ingredients that won't harm the environment. That's another consideration that goes into why people choose products. Like, for example, palm oil. Palm oil sourced from Brazil has been a major problem, but palm oil itself is phenomenal for very thick, curly hair, especially if it's dry. Palm oil works great. It is one of the better, less super greasy, I don't know, it's moisturizing but not awful in the hair. It works great in my hair. Mm-hmm. And so the palm oil I'm using right now is from Malaysia. So when you see Malaysian palm oil, that's sort of my cue of making you understand that they're not chopping down the Brazilian rainforest to make this particular oil. Okay, but again, that's a consideration that people have when they are choosing which ingredients to use in formulas.
Bear this in mind.
The DIYers are very specific and we have a lot of leeway in what we decide to choose because it's not going to break the bank for us to spend a little bit of extra to stick to certain values that we have.
But wait a minute.
Also, before I leave this topic, the process of growing any given ingredient and whether it goes into the country's local economy is also very important to certain people. They care that this shea butter is being made in a village that is allowing the women of the village or whoever's making it to actually, make money from the hard process of creating something that millions of people all over the world enjoy. So a lot of people take that into consideration, how it's grown. Is it sustainable? Is it biodegradable? Like, does it break down? Or is it a forever chemical? That's also a consideration that people have when they are choosing certain ingredients.
Learn at your own pace at CurlyT.com. Create finished products by watching each DIY video.
Another major consideration is simple compatibility. Which ingredients work with each other? Like, this is basic 101 type of stuff.
What can you do to solve the problem?
Cationic ingredients are mostly incompatible with anionics, right?
I don't have a word.
We should all know this by now. The exception is cationic polyquats mixing with anionic surfactant cleansing ingredients.
What?
Those two things work well together, but as a general rule, the cationics and the anionics fight each other to the death. They punch, they kick, they scream, they yell.
They fight!
They don't like each other. They hate each other. They got beef forever, okay? For example, adding an anionic polymer into a BTMS-based conditioner during cooldown phase will cause instability. Okay, don't ask me how I know. Just know that I know. I'm telling you, BTMS is cationic. Many of the polymers that thicken things quickly are anionic. And so if you put those two together, you will have problems. Okay. Another compatibility issue is the pH requirements of the preservatives that you've chosen are another consideration you have to take into account when you're talking about compatibility. Some preservatives only work or work best in a specific pH range. Like for example, if you use an ingredient that works best at a pH of 6, like carbomer, you may find trouble. With a preservative that works best at a pH of 5 or below, okay? Carbomer, especially sodium carbomer, and I've experienced this directly. Sodium carbomer will turn back into a liquid if you look at it wrong. If you breathe hard, it'll turn back into a liquid. No, I'm being facetious, of course, but there are many things that you cannot use if you will use sodium carbomer. Many of your preservatives work best at 5.5 and below. Now, you can possibly get away with certain things that work up to a pH of 6, but there will be preservatives that you will have to skip if you are using certain ingredients, okay? And so that compatibility issue will weigh heavy on what you decide or how you decide to manufacture your home-based product. Now, in addition to that, the pH requirements of different ingredients in your formula will also determine what you use and what you can't use. Like, easily accessible carbomers work best at 6, like I said, but many of these great herbs that we use for hair care all the time, like hibiscus and some of the more tart herbs, they often lower the pH. So, like I said, using those two things together will cause the carbomer not to gel at all. Or if you add it after the fact, it could cause the carbomer to turn back into a liquid. Also, you have to worry about electrolytes. Like, are you introducing electrolytes into a system that's going to negatively affect the stability of the emulsion? Electrolytes are an entirely different beast. They can cause all types of problems if not formulated correctly. Some of the emulsifiers that you use will have a problem dealing with electrolytes.
If you were not ready and did not know what to do, it could hurt you in different ways.
And so that causes people to pick one thing over the other. All of this sounds more complicated. Well, I won't say that. I was going to say it sounds more complicated than it is, but no, it really is kind of complex. There are things that you have to take into consideration. It's just the way this works.
Oh, that was just schoolwork.
Right? This is why certain people study for years to get this stuff right, right?
Learn at your own pace at CurlyT.com. Create finished products by watching each DIY video.
Let me shorthand this a little bit and conclude just by saying there are a lot of reasons why people choose specific ingredients. The availability is one. If you live in a country where it's hard for you to obtain things from overseas, you're gonna have to pick and choose from what's readily available in your country. If you don't have an enormous amount of funds to just be buying everything from everywhere, you're gonna have to choose from what's readily available in your country, right? So availability is an issue. What will work best for your hair type is also a major consideration. If you have wavy hair versus super curly 4C hair versus straight relaxed hair, your considerations for which ingredients you choose may be completely different. Now, what your personal preferences are also determines which ingredients you use. Like, what you've heard about a specific category of ingredients will determine whether or not you decide to use that ingredient in your formula. What the environmental cost is associated with that particular ingredient. How it's grown, is it sustainable, is it biodegradable? All of these things go into deciding what ingredients you will choose and what ingredients you will pass up. Now, all of these things factor into what type of formula you're going to create. Whether the ingredients are compatible with each other, whether they are compatible with the preservative you choose, all of these things are super important. And so a lot of this stuff is not random because it can't be random. You have to know what pH range your preservative will work best in. You have to know whether or not cationics and anionics work well together. You have to know what you can get your hands on in your country and what you can't. Like, all of these things are super important. And those are, from what I can see, the major considerations people use when they are deciding which ingredient to add to specific products and why. Now, when you decide what you want to do, try to take at least some of this information into account. There are those of us who have been working and testing and modifying and figuring out this this and figuring out that for years. So take our advice into consideration when you are deciding for yourself which ingredients to use. And also try not to be so spooked by every new marketing term, because people are really, really, some of these companies are really, really looking for the next anti-ingredient to fight and rail against so that they can introduce an entirely new category of ingredients that may or may not be effective at all. I know that sounds harsh, but yeah, like for example, a lot of us bought into the no silicones and that was going to solve everybody's hair dryness problems and problems with this and problems with that and problems with break. Yeah, no. For some of us, it just made it worse because we were now using a set of ingredients that offered very little protection for our sensitive curly hair. So just keep an open mind, I'd say. If you want me to summarize my message for this podcast, is keep an open mind. Keep an open mind and understand there are considerations that need to be made when you are deciding which ingredients to use and why. Talk to you guys soon.
Are you through already?
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for listening to this Curly Tea podcast. Don't forget to go to the website to get all of the DIY information about specific formulas, including instructions, my notes, ingredients lists, and other information. Follow on social media or become a patron at Patreon if that's more convenient for you. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Natural hair beauty is possible if you take care of your hair and make the most of what nature has given you.
Shout out to the patrons at Patreon and the beautiful subscribers at the website.
Learn at your own pace at curlytea.com. Create finished products by watching each DIY video. Choose from a range of formula categories and upgrade to private online consultation, if necessary, at curlytea.com.